and you're in front of everyone, and
I don't want people to see me when I'm wet. Like, that's just a really awkward thing.
Are you wearing white too?
Why
would you wear white and you then dunk someone and then it's just like nipples and dicks everywhere?
Yeah.
It's not great.
This is MK. I am a recovering evangelical here to explain some of my wacky stories to my friends and my husband.
Hi, I'm Ian. I'm MK's husband. Raised as a heathen and having no religious background, I provide fact-checking and act as MK's auxiliary memory.
And I'm Kathy, their Bible-ignorant friend. I'm here for the what the fucks. Together, we'll be sharing stories that will make you go, Jesus, that's weird.
Episode 1. We're not Catholic. We don't do that. An introduction to us and what it is we think we're doing here, practically, spiritually, and otherwise.
Ian told me I should talk to you about your evangelical background because someone tried to convert me for the first time in my life in my 40s. And when I told him the story, he just kind of looked at me and was like, oh, you sweet summer child, with his eyes. So, and I had no idea about your background. So he just thought that we should have a conversation about all that.
Yeah. So I was kind of thinking about what brought us here today. I think the biggest thing is over the past year, like, I've been hanging out with Ian, and more often I'd be saying things like, oh, I don't think I ever told you this story before. And then I would reel off some story about something that happened to me 25 years ago. And Ian would look at me and go, that's really fucking weird, man. I attribute a lot of this to working with my therapist and stuff starting to kind of bubble up again. I'm like, oh shit, I haven't thought of that in 25 years. Great. Okay. So part of it is these stories are surfacing for me. And I also think there's probably a lot of 80s, 90s kids who went through some of this stuff, and that some of these stories would kind of resonate with them, or it might remind them of things. And some of them are very funny. You know, and I hope that I can kind of like work through some of my history in my own way and some of the things that I did to kind of navigate this world. Because, you know, when you're, maybe you don't know, but when you're born into a evangelical Christian household, you don't know that that's not the norm for everyone. Mm-hmm. And my mom was the real driver of the family. She was the one who made us go to church. She was the one that made us pray. My dad, for the longest time, I mean, he went to church, but he didn't really participate a whole lot. I come from, on my dad's side, a long line of good Catholic ancestors. Mm-hmm. But my mom was always evangelical, and so it was a real scandal in the family when dad converted.
Wait, it was a scandal when your dad converted to Catholicism or evangelicalism? No,
from Catholicism to being an evangelical.
Okay.
Yep. In broad strokes, the Catholics were around first. They draw their lineage all the way back to the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. And the Protestants came along when Martin Luther nailed his 95 Theses to the door in Wittenberg. Fun fact, I saw that door. It's still there today. It's just a wooden door. And kind of much like that door, he didn't know he was starting a new religion when he did that.
Yeah.
He was putting up, hey guys, some of this stuff that you're doing sucks.
He was basically like a guy in the comment section being like, nah, man.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of his bitches were about this one dude, this guy who was going around and selling what were called indulgences.
Oh gosh. Yes. I learned about that. Okay. I will just preface with, everything I know about religion has to do with my art history background. And nice. So I know about indulgences because a lot of them were gorgeous looking. Mm-hmm. And also, they painted the indulgences into people's Bibles sometimes.
No kidding. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Was that like how you had proof that you had received the indulgence?
No, it was a status symbol because indulgences could be so expensive. So the fact that you had one was like, hey, look at me. Look how much money I have.
That's amazing. Okay, that makes total sense. This particular dude in the church was actually really good at selling indulgences. And he got sent out to do fundraising. He was just this real high-pressure salesman who covered a lot of ground in Germany and was starting to piss Martin Luther off. He was like a used car salesman.
Yeah.
So a lot of his complaints about this was like, I don't like what this guy is doing. He didn't know he was creating a new religion.
Right. He was just like, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something I want to jump in. You say a new religion. I'm curious, maybe this is too pedantic, but I'm like, with the definition of religion, it's still Christianity, yeah? I mean, like, but it's like a different, this is like Christ 2.0 or something? Like, I'm not clear on on whether it's like a sect or like a religion or how to properly refer to this split.
You know, I'm probably betraying my Protestant evangelical background by calling it a new religion, because somewhere in my bones, my mother taught me that the Catholics weren't really Christians.
Oh, burn.
Yeah.
So there's so much here. Okay, well, first of all, is it all under the umbrella of Christianity?
Yes.
Okay. What are the different sects then? Big umbrellas. It's Catholicism, mm-hmm. Protestants.
Yep, Protestants.
So do evangelicals fall under Protestants?
Yes.
Okay.
All evangelicals are Protestants. All Protestants are not necessarily evangelicals.
Okay. Is that just it? It's just those two?
Eastern Orthodoxy is
yes.
the other
oh, that's
big
right.
version.
My grandmother is Orthodox. Yeah. Yep.
You could also make an argument the Church of England is under that top level umbrella. Over here, they're known as Episcopalians. And I don't know a whole lot. Everything I learned about the Episcopalians was from the HBO show 6 Feet Under.
I didn't realize they were Episcopalian.
Yeah, they're Episcopalians in that.
I was just going to jump in and say that the super-powered indulgence seller was Johann Tetzel.
Yes, that is right. Thank you.
To rebuild St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, he was raising money by selling indulgences left and right.
St. Peter's Basilica is wild. Have you all ever been?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I learned about it because of my art history degree. And there are like several versions of that church all just built on top of each other, on the ruins of each other.
Wow. Yeah.
And so if you go down in the basement of the basement of the basement of this church is supposedly St. Peter's grave. They just built the church on top of his grave.
Mm-hmm.
Why not next to it? I don't know why it needs to be on top of it, but okay.
I think I have an answer for you on that
one.
Because Peter, right before Jesus was crucified, he said to Peter, "You will be the rock that I build my church upon."
Actually, the origin of the word petrified, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Petrification.
Peter. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the Catholics actually view Peter as the first pope. He is literally the foundation and figuratively the foundation of the church.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was literally built on top of him,
though. Oh, yeah. Right on top.
They took that very literally. It seems like a hell mouth in reverse.
Mm-hmm. Peter was martyred. He was killed by the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is, and I don't believe this is in the Bible, but Peter is said to have been, and I've never been able to figure this out, been crucified upside down.
Yeah.
Because he felt unworthy to be crucified the same way that Jesus was.
I always thought it was because, not that he felt unworthy, I thought it was because the Romans didn't want to dignify his death to his idol. What do you call Jesus? What is he? Prophet? To his prophet?
Yeah, they would have called him a prophet.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could certainly be, too. I don't remember the politics around why Peter was martyred, except Christians were still a minority religion. And actually, the Romans were pretty cool with all religions, but they got real bent out of shape about that whole monotheistic thing. Because to the Romans, it's like, well, sure, there's a bunch of gods. Pay your taxes. Don't be a jerk. And everything will be fine. And you got these early Christians going, no, there's no Zeus and there's not the Jewish God. Yahweh was allowed to be around. And they're like, you only got one. And the Romans like, I thought we went through this. Taxes and leave other people alone and you'll be fine. And it took until Constantine said it was okay for the early Christians to not be out of favor with the Romans.
So really what you're saying is that what the Romans were complaining about Christians for years is still true.
Yes, very much so. Which I think is probably a good segue into what a couple of these words mean. Evangelicals are unique amongst all types of Christians in that converting of the lost is of preeminent importance to them.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is annoying you with their belief in Jesus, there's a real good chance it's an evangelical.
Yeah.
For example, your relatives who are trying to convert you, do you know what their background is?
No. All I know is that they go to a mega church. And as I've talked with other people about this, they're like, well, they're probably Protestant and they're probably evangelical.
Yeah.
She was just saying, believe in Jesus. And I was like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe him as a figure.
Sure.
Historical figure.
He existed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of at the heart of it. That's why maybe Protestants in general and evangelicals in specific think that Catholics aren't going to heaven or they're going somewhere when they die, that they're not real Christians. Because the Catholics, like the church is the intercessor to God. Like you do the stuff the church says and, you know, you'll go to purgatory to pay for your sins for a little bit. Your family will pray for you. Eventually your sins will be purged and you get to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. The Protestants, what it turned into was there are no intercessors, that you can have a direct relationship with God. A church was a place to go and learn, but a preacher in a Protestant church, and this applies to pretty much all of them, does not have the same, I will speak to God for you, that the Catholic priest has.
I had no idea that the Catholics don't want you reading the Bible on your own, that it's the priest that's mm-hmm. supposed to be doing it for you. And I was like, that's kind of fucked up. There's a lot of gatekeeping there that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, that brings up like a really interesting controversy that persists to this day. The reading of Mass in a language other than Latin, you know, in English, for example,
yeah,
that is a new thing. And I don't mean new like 300 years ago. I mean new like 40s or the 30s or something like that.
Vatican II was in the autumn each of the 4 years, 1962 to 1965.
So Vatican II said, yes, we've been doing the Mass in Latin since we've had a Mass. Hmm. Now you can do it in English. You can do it in Spanish.
Right.
And you can do it in, they call it vernacular, whatever is a, mm-hmm. you know, a language that's still spoken by people. You will find Catholics today who still complain about the changes of Vatican II. To me, it's always been wild that the services were in a language you couldn't understand until when the Beatles were big.
Yeah.
Until very recently, like understanding what was being said in church was not a thing. Reading the Bible was not a thing. Mm-hmm. Like the biggest difference between that and the church that I grew up in. So I grew up in a Bible church, which is a non-denominational. There's no United States group of Bible churches. It's a single church. It stands on its own. It answers to no higher authority except God. The thing that my church believed, and a lot of these other churches believe, is that the Bible is literally true front to back, every word. It's not figuratively true. It's not a myth. And it's also literally the only revelation that God has offered human beings. For the Catholics, like the revelation of God can be anywhere. So that's like a really huge difference between this tiny version of Christianity that I was raised in versus the Catholics. The Bible is all you have. There aren't any miracles. There aren't any visions. There aren't any modern prophets. Some of the mega churches kind of part with that now because a lot of them have started to like engage in prophecy. The church that I grew up in, like if you said you were a prophet, that would get you kicked right out. That if you had some kind of Jesus has revealed something to me about the doctrine of Christianity and I'm here to tell you it, get out of here.
Oh, so Mormonism.
No, get Fuck that you. Out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
The church I grew up in literally believes there was a Noah's Ark, that they literally put two of every animal on this boat. And that God flooded the entire planet with water.
I mean, that part is true. Not that God but that there was actually a giant flood.
Yeah, yeah. Every religion has a myth about a big giant flood. And when I say myth, I want to clarify this. This is not a pejorative term. Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Hero's Journey, he also wrote a book called Myths to Live By, mm-hmm. which is kind of an examination of how these stories help make us human. So I don't mean myth like it's like mythology, or if I call something a myth, I'm not saying it's literally untrue or I think it's nonsense.
It's a story type.
Yes, yeah.
Lore being passed down. You're not weighing in on the mm-hmm. the truthiness of it.
No, so if I said something like, well, every major religion has a creation myth, that means that they all have a story about how we came to be, not I think every single one of them is bullshit.
That's where a lot of my knowledge in religion is in the comparison of myths and how myths have fed into each other. Mm-hmm. So this is what makes me extraordinarily curious about your background. Mm-hmm. This is not myth. This is history for the religion that you came from.
Yes. Yes. This is fact. This is literal. This is where you get the creationists. So creationists believe that the world is 6,000 years old, that there's no evolution, that God created us as it's described in the Bible. Like on the seventh day, he made a dude. The dude was lonely. He took a literal rib from that dude and made a woman out of dust and ribs. Still not sure how clear how that works. And that was it. That's how humans came to be. One day they weren't there. The next day they were. The animals were created by God in their perfect final form, the form that we see them today. That's where that real, like, rigid insistence on evolution is not real. It shouldn't be taught in schools. It's like Scopes monkey trial shit from the beginning of the last century.
Yeah.
That's always been the kind of the one of the hardest hardest ones for me to accept, even when I was a little kid. This could be just a description of how things began. It could just be a metaphor.
Yeah.
If God exists and God put in place the means of organic chemistry and evolution, and this is how we came to be, well, who's going to know how to write that 6,000 years ago? It's like, well, there were 7 days. And there was 7 million years or 70 million years. I don't know. But that one, even when I was a kid, I'm like, we probably just don't know what happened. And this literal 7 day stuff seems really weird. But my parents were the kind of people who were mad that evolution was taught in schools. You know, I had to take Sunday school courses in like how to argue with my biology teachers about how creationism is true and evolution is false.
They gave you talking points?
Oh,
like,
yes.
You had like homework of like, okay, so go and tell Mr. Jordan that XYZ, wow.
My high school definitely had a, okay, this is the day in freshman biology when we let everyone who's got some crank religious view tell us what they believe. That was the only way they could keep all the families.
Let's do a little bit of a background here. All
sure,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you grew up in
Mid-Michigan
and you went to a public school.
I did.
So it's interesting to me that a religious leader would be like, hey, little Timmy, here's some talking points for the outline on how to argue with your teacher.
Yeah. I can share a couple with
you. Yeah. I was going to say, what are they?
The big one, and you see this all the time, you can look this up on creationist websites, as the misuse of the second law of thermodynamics, the law of entropy. Systems break down over time.
The second law of thermodynamics is a physical law based on universal experience concerning heat and energy interconversions. A simple statement of the law is that heat always flows spontaneously from hotter to colder regions of matter, or downhill in terms of temperature gradient.
Yes, hot things cool off. That's a really great way to put it. Now, the face you're giving me is, how does that explain anything?
Yeah, please tell me how.
Well, it doesn't.
But okay.
They extrapolate that because heat cools off, the natural order of the universe is to go from complicated to simple, the way things go from hot to cold.
What?
That's a big leap.
No, these are all huge leaps. Sometimes it's referred to as the law of entropy, and they extrapolate that to mean that systems break down.
Ian, the tech chair up here, just realized that I have to put on private browsing because I feel like I'm about to get into some shit, and my browser history is going to be ugly. So I
feel like religious leaders could have probably come up with something a little tighter.
Yeah, you'll still see that on comment sections on right-wing websites. You'll still hear people talk about the second law of thermodynamics means evolution can't exist. One of those has to do with adaptation. The other one has to do with dispersion of heat.
I think it argues the opposite, which is that if things change and evolve, that means that there's evolution.
It's really just a terrible misstatement of what that law of matter says.
Okay.
That if heat disperses from hot to cold, then all systems must degrade over time, not improve. Like, you can't go from a one-celled organism to a human being, because systems get simpler over time, not more complicated, because the second law of thermodynamics says concentrations of heat become dispersed. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
It's real nonsense.
I'm assuming you did actually do this to teachers.
I started to feel really embarrassed about that time.
Okay.
So I didn't.
Did any of your peers at church? And what kind of reactions would they get from the teachers?
My particular teacher, he just let everyone kind of go.
Okay.
I remember it was like a little group project thing. They tried to make, you know, some kind of work out of it. And you could like, I'm going to be in the pro-evolution group and I'm going to present an argument, and then the Christians will present a counter-argument to it. So it's kind of like a weird little debate class thing.
That's so weird, though, because I'm like, that's giving it so much legitimacy and time. You're absolutely being like, you should be making these arguments in school in front of other people. It kind of seems like public schools allowing a form of proselytizing.
One thing, though, to keep in mind, that the scale of the school system that I went to, it's so small that they came up with this rule because Jerry Smith wouldn't shut the fuck up at school board meetings. You know, that's all made up. There was like 5 parents who were harassing the superintendent, and they all know each other by name. And it's like, well, we got to do something because I'm sick of these people yelling at us in school board meetings. So we'll have this day when everyone can present what they want to the class. And that'll make Jerry and Janice, who come in every monthly school board meeting and raise a ruckus, and that'll make them happy.
I'm going to read this quote. One feature of the law of decay, Perrin, the second law of thermodynamics, or the entropy law, seems especially beneficial in the context of sin. The more we humans sin, the more pain and work we encounter.
What the fuck does that even mean?
I don't even know what that means.
I can't even
know what it means.
No, I feel like they just described karma.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like a what goes around.
Comes around?
Comes around thing.
But in a more convoluted way.
Trying to make it sound like science.
Yeah.
Yeah. The law of decay, that just tripped something in my brain.
Okay, great.
Okay.
That's where they really hang their hat on this. Like, systems break down. Biological things break down. They don't build up.
But evolution isn't building up.
No. But that's
their argument.
That's their argument, is that if something... Thank you for looking that up. This just really jogged some somewhat traumatic memories, actually. We'll get to that. But the idea of, like, if something dies, it decays. It returns to a simpler form. Since the universe has this law of decay, which is only decay in a very specific case, things must decay over time. To them, evolution and decay are two sides of the same coin.
Right, because they already think that we were brought into this earth in our perfect form and therefore can only go downhill from here.
Exactly.
Yes. Here's another quote. I think this is helpful, at least for me. As entropy may be considered a measure of disorder, the orderliness of living systems and the complexity of organic molecules are taken by creationists to be a violation of this law of physics requiring divine intervention. So basically, the fact that stuff is complicated is proof that God exists, is what I'm taking. Is that,
yes.
Is that about it?
Yeah.
Because otherwise... by pseudoscience, their interpretation of this quote-unquote law of decay, everything would be random molecules. We wouldn't have life. We wouldn't have complicated organisms. That's why there has to be God.
A version of this gets regurgitated in a version of this argument called intelligent design. They leave a little bit of wiggle room for some scientific processes, but that God was behind it all from the beginning. I don't know how the universe began. Like, when I was in high school, I was always like, well, if God set in place the laws of evolution, that's still God creating life. That was one of the first things that I was like, why are they so hung up on this?
Mm-hmm. The literal creation myth is literally true and not a parable.
It's not a parable. It is literally true.
The Adam and Eve story is what tripped me up as a kid. And so when I asked my grandmother, who's Orthodox, like, what's the deal? She just looked at me. She's like, that didn't actually happen. That's just a story that simplifies what did happen. And this is what we have. And so that's what we cherish. And I think that's a gorgeous way to think about it. So it seems weird to me that someone would take it as literal. Mm-hmm. And maybe people in ancient past also took myth as literal, and we just don't know that. I have no idea.
Yeah, you're highlighting a real difference between the background that I grew up in versus Catholics for sure, Protestants as well, because different Protestant denominations have different amount of theological wiggle room on how true the Bible is. But the Bible church folks, the evangelicals, it is the literal, absolute, and the only revealed truth from God. That's the only story. There can't be another one, because if there's another one, then that means it's not literally true and the only revelation of God. There can't be any revelations of science, because it all has been revealed to us in the Bible.
Who do they think wrote the Bible?
That God literally inspired the men who wrote it.
Okay.
And that God divinely inspired them. This one's always been a little tricky for people to get around, is like, there's books that were written that were part of the Bible at some point and then got removed and then got added in later.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we have that comes down to us was church council of something or other. I can't remember, where they're like, okay, this is what's in the Bible and everything else that isn't is not. These are the ones that are in. Those are the ones that are out.
The human editing thing is interesting, but I'm going to take it back a step. You were saying that in your church, if anybody claimed to be a prophet, they would get booted. What this means to me, though, is that somebody had to be a prophet at some point. I'm really curious, and I'm like, when and why did God snap the chalk line and was like, we're done with prophets now. We profited. We're done. We're here. Yep. Don't call me. Read the book. You know, just...
They acknowledge the existence of biblical prophecy, that Isaiah was a prophet, that Jesus was a prophet. Well, Jesus or Paul were considered the last. You probably catch an argument over whether Paul was a prophet or not. I think my church would say Jesus was the last prophet. That's when it stopped. And it stopped because Jesus told us, that's it. There's nothing else to tell. God revealed everything there is to reveal. So from the book of Genesis, I guess people might consider John of Patmos a prophet. He wrote Revelation. That's the last book of the Bible that describes the end times. Whatever it is your metaphor of God snapping a chalk line? Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. God stopped prophecy at a certain point, and that's it. There is no revelation past that.
It must be nice to be omnipotent. I feel like the minute you hit publish on the blog post, you're like, damn it, there's a typo. I would want to be able to do content updates myself, mm-hmm. but I also like the idea that everything that's happening now is like irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Jesus came along, he did the thing, and we're good now.
Yep, that's it.
Until he comes back, right? Is he the one that comes back?
Okay. Yeah, yep.
So I guess I should probably say how ignorant I am about the Bible, which is why I'm asking these dumb questions is it Jesus that comes back?
That's okay.
I don't think I've ever opened a Bible in my life. The Lutheran church I went to, the priest was very big on community service. So I got behind that and I somehow escaped ever touching a Bible because I just did a bunch of community work.
Yeah.
Anything that I did learn about stories of it was from my art history degree. So most of what I know is archetypes and most of what I know is the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's a pretty one to paint.
Yep.
So a lot of what I know is her and the Catholic faith, because I don't know, Christians weren't very artistic or something. I'm not sure.
Different sects had different prohibitions on depicting anything.
Okay.
I won't get the names right, but there are some that don't allow any depictions. Similar to like how, I don't know if it's all Muslims or all of Islam, but you cannot portray the prophet in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
There are some Protestant churches that adhere to various versions of that. And that sort of controversy rolls up right to modern day where it's like, Bible talks about worshiping God. What does that mean? Does that mean we can play guitars? Does that mean we can play rock music? Is Christian rock a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And you will catch arguments from folks being like, no, it's not a thing. That's not what was intended at all. Electric guitars are sinful and we should only sing, you know, Martin Luther wrote a shit ton of hymns.
Yeah.
We should only sing those or we should only do the chants. I only went to a couple of masses in my life and most of them were marriage and funeral masses.
Wait, what do you mean masses? What's the difference between masses and just going to church?
Mass is the name for the Catholic service.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
My church would say Sunday service.
Oh, okay.
And the equivalent Catholic would say Sunday Mass.
Okay, got it.
The Catholics have their traditions about how they do things. But one feature of the Catholic faith is it can evolve with the times. There's no chalk line in Catholicism. The Pope can make changes. I'm going to butcher the verse. Jesus said to Peter, as you hold it on earth, I shall hold it in heaven, which the Catholics interpret to mean that the Pope is literally incapable of making a mistake. And what they say goes.
Can you say that verse one more time?
Yeah, it's...
It doesn't... And not literal. I'm just trying to make sure that in my head I'm connecting it to a pagan thing.
Basically, what Jesus was saying to Peter, who he said, I'm going to build my church upon you, is what you hold on earth, I shall hold in heaven. Meaning as far as what you decide as dogma and rules, I got your back.
I interpreted it as the pagan saying of as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, the way that Catholicism even became popular is that they just grabbed pagan holidays and were like, oh, so December 21st in the winter solstice, you're worshiping the return of the sun, S-U-N. Mm-hmm. How's about instead you worship a sun, S-O-N, and his rising into earth? But they had to move it to an area that the community was already celebrating. And they're like, yeah, we're just going to superimpose this new holiday on your old holiday and it'll make it easier. And then eventually your grandkids won't remember what you were doing on the winter solstice. And instead, they're going to remember about Jesus.
Yeah, there's actually some controversy in your Roman history about that, because when the Christian church became acceptable, that was some of the stuff that they did. Because a lot of those pagan rituals had made their way into other Roman belief systems.
Yeah.
And the Romans were not monotheists. They were...
Polytheists?
Not even necessarily polytheists, but like open to multiple systems.
Yeah.
Let's just buy insurance from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's Zeus. I don't know if it's Jupiter or Yahweh. Why do I have to choose, man? They were very like polysystemic. Or I don't know.
I believe the quote is, what you bind on earth shall be considered bound in heaven.
Yes.
And whatever you loose on earth shall be considered loosed in heaven.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so that's Matthew 16:19.
Still tracks, though.
Yeah.
Yep. That's why the Catholics have things like Vatican II. That's why they can do the Mass in English now. They don't have a chalk line. God said there isn't a chalk line. Jesus said to Peter, what you do on earth is cool because you are the rock of my church. What you decide is legit.
How's that interpreted by the evangelical church then?
I have never heard any.
They're just like,
no, I've never heard any explanation.
Do they just not talk about it? Is that just, you never had like a sermon about that? They didn't give you like talking points against your like Catholic family members or people you ran into. They just were we're not down with Matthew 16, 19.
I grew up in this church where memorizing Bible verses was something I was expected to do week in and week out. I didn't know about that verse until I saw it in Kevin Smith's Dogma in the late 90s. But I'm like, is that a fucking thing? And turns out that that's the whole thing that gives the Pope their legitimacy. That's what the system is based on.
And that's
on.
Why they didn't want you to know about it, because y'all don't believe in the Pope, right?
No.
Yeah, okay. No. That is funny. That's like when I was watching the second season of Good Omens. They depict this story.
The Book of Job.
And I just looked at my husband and I was like, oh, so they're just making up a story so as not to offend the Catholics or the Christians. And he just looked at me and was like, this is actually in the Bible. And I was like, that's fucked up, man. Why would God do that? Yeah. Like, and that's the Old Testament, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is one of the more messed up ones, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I honestly 100% get why when Catholics came around, people converted. Because if you look at the pagan or any of the earlier pre-Christian, pre-Catholic religions, they're not nice gods.
No.
They are vengeful and catty, and it's basically high school, but in the sky. You know, so if someone comes by and's like, hey, so our God is gentle and forgives you for any of the bad things that you do and is not going to punish you. Fucking A, I would sign up for that.
Yeah.
100%.
And one of the things that they offer to this day, it's a system. And if you do this, you'll spend some time in purgatory atoning for your sins, and then you will be redeemed and live in heaven. If you don't do this, then you won't. And it's real simple, because you do what the church says, you're fine. But they can also change those sacraments. And it's like, well, now the rules are this. Okay, cool. Well, I'll just follow those rules. Good to go. You know, and someone living under the fear of a vengeful pagan god, it's like, so I got to drink a little bit of wine and have a little wafer and, you know, say Hail Mary and admit to my sins and I go to heaven? That's great. Okay. Cool. Sign me up.
The more that I do research on the God, I feel like I'm in a Game of Thrones of the old gods. They're morality lessons. They're stories to teach you how to move through life.
Yeah.
Unlike the Bible, I guess. Are those morality stories too?
Well, unlike the certain interpretations of the Bible, a lot of Catholics would say exactly what you say. Some of them are really messed up. Like, I don't know what morality the Book of Job is teaching you.
Exactly. That was what I was going to say. I was like, these are not Aesop's fables. This is not cut and dried where there's like a little saying at the end and there's like, and if you behave like Job, XYZ will happen to you. Some of this stuff, I'm like, why would anybody even have this idea for a story?
Yeah.
Let alone the idea that everybody should know it and it should be taught and it's some sort of theistic wisdom. I don't know that many of them, by the way. I do feel like I'll jump in here because I have one Bible story about myself, because I actually have even less religious background than Kathy. I wasn't raised reading the Bible. I wasn't raised going to church. I have like a handful of encounters with religion as a kid. One was that my dad and I read Chronicles of Narnia, and I was not told at all that it was like a Jesus allegory.
I had no idea.
I had no idea. I just thought Aslan was dope. I was like, this guy is awesome. He's just cool under pressure. I haven't read in a long time, so maybe it's problematic. I just remember the time I was like, there's two boys and two girls, and like usually the girls don't get to do adventure. They were like shooting arrows and stuff, and I was like, this is awesome. And I had no idea. And after we read it, I remember my dad at one point being like, okay, tonight when we're having reading time, we're gonna do a study. And the background on me is that I was a nerd kid. I was a book it kid who did it for the books and not just for the pizza. I loved Epcot. I loved documentaries as a kid. So I'm thinking like a science study. I was like, I did not connect this to Narnia. I was just like, we finished those books. We're going to go on to something else. He pulled out the Bible. I cannot tell you how disappointed I was. Like, I was like, I was like, this is the study? I was just like, what the hell? I mean, I don't think I knew curse words, but my little childhood heart just like fell down in my stomach and I was so sad. The good news was that it lasted all of one night. Like he didn't follow through.
Hey, that's good.
Zero follow through. So we didn't actually like study the Bible. I was like, Jesus had way better branding when he was a lion. He was just way more interesting.
Oh, that was who Jesus is supposed to be?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't get any of that. Like, for someone who grew up with so many religious traditions around me, I don't think I've ever seen any of my family members hold a Bible outside of church, honestly. Mm. I think it's because Orthodox, to me, is a dualistic religion. If you see any of the customs or traditions that we have, and you just saw it at face value, you'd be like, oh, that's pagan as fuck.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a lot of Orthodox who are like, we're going to keep doing what we're fucking doing.
Yeah.
And if you want us to say Jesus's name instead of saying whatever, God,
find and replace.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We have our own family saint.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Okay. That we were assigned by the bishop, that this is our family saint.
Man, I wish I would have had one of those. I would have made life a lot easier, I think. Here's your saint.
It smells to me of the house saint or an ancestor almost, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you think of any of the old historic pagan stuff. And we have to celebrate him once a year on his day.
Yeah. See, that's great. And when I was a kid, because like I said, I grew up big family. We were the only Protestants and evangelicals. So a lot of cousins, a lot of Catholic weddings. I just always thought that stuff was so cool. And it was always a real tension with my mom. My dad didn't give a shit. But like, I'm a little kid. I'm like 5, 6 years old and I see everyone crossing themselves. So I cross myself. I got into trouble for that.
Wait, evangelicals are not allowed to do the sign of the cross?
No, we don't do the sign of the cross.
Why not?
Because that's what the Catholics do.
That's the only reason?
That was the reason I was given. We're not Catholic. We don't do that.
But it's Jesus, though, right? That's what...
We're not Catholic. We don't do that. That's what I got when I was a kid. My mom, it scared... Like, I'm telling you this story right now. That scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Like, I'd been caught with a porno mag or something. Like, it was that level of shame. Like, you don't do this.
Okay, this is what I have in my head right now, all right? Is that evangelicals are like the nerds in high school. Because book reading, seriously, you take it literally.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Catholics are like the cool kids with like slicked back hair and leather jackets. And some of you really want to be like them because they just look cool and you don't really know what all that means. But you just want to try on the leather jacket.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'll even go further with that. It's the nerdery level of people who are arguing about comic book canon and stuff like that. Like that that level of nerdery that it's like you must understand and enjoy a thing in a certain way, otherwise it's not valid. Like that level of like annoying nerdery, I think, is like the evangelical view on it. And it's like you don't disrespect canon, you know?
It's kind of like the rules lawyer of a game.
There is no pun intended when in Rome, when Protestants and at least in my family, when we were in the Roman Catholic Church, you don't go along to get along. You stand there and don't do the sign of the cross. You don't do the chants. You don't kneel. You stand. My parents just sat there. They didn't do the kneeling. They would stand when people stood, but they wouldn't kneel.
I understand that kneeling is a big deal for folks who are not Catholic. It's definitely not something that you would do.
Mm-hmm.
I kneel in a Catholic church because I'm being conscientious in someone else's home.
Yeah, exactly. To young MK, that was my thought as well. It's like, well, show some respect, right?
Right.
These are my aunts and uncles and my cousins. It's this big Catholic, you know, everyone's in their finest. And like, well, what's wrong with it? I mean, I see Jesus on the cross in this place. We're singing some of the same songs.
Mm-hmm.
I was just mortified that I had messed up.
How did they expect you to know? That's my question.
I have no idea. My mother's trauma with the Catholic Church is probably a topic for a whole other episode, but my mother was born into an evangelical family, born into a what's known as a fire and brimstone preaching church. You are going to hell. You are going to literal hell where you will literally burn for literally ever.
And this is where I feel like they took the branch of Christianity of a kind God and just went in a totally different direction.
Yeah, they just went apeshit.
Why?
Yeah.
Why are people so focused on brimstone and hellfire and horrible things being spat at them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
I don't think I got it either. And I know when my mom and my dad got together and mom was like, we're getting married in a Baptist church. You're going to be Baptist if we're going to be married. It was a real problem with my mom's mother-in-law. And there was some real ugliness at their wedding. Probably a story for another time. But the Catholics made a real hash of it.
So how did your mom even, is this like a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing? Like how did your mom even fall in love with a Catholic?
I have no idea. That's a good question.
It just seems that if she came from such a evangelical fire and brimstone background, like, oh, maybe she ran away with the guy in the leather jacket.
I don't know. Without getting too personal, my parents' relationship never made sense to me, and it still doesn't to this day.
So many questions, MK. Maybe we can start here and go backwards, because we can't answer all these questions in one episode. Where are you now? Are you an atheist?
I probably would classify as agnostic, where I'm, you know, open to the idea of some kind of, I'll put it this way, I constitutionally cannot believe in the God that I was raised to believe in.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, the book of Job was the thing that really set me on this path of losing that faith, that God would punish a faithful servant for a bet with Satan.
Yeah.
Even like 14 or 15 year old me was like, that does not seem like the work of a just and loving God.
Yeah.
And that was always a contradiction. The evolution thing was always a contradiction. I don't really believe in any of Christianity. If there's any religion that's resonated with me over the years, it's been Buddhism. The thing about Christianity that really drives me the craziest in this country is the intertwining of evangelicals and politics.
Yeah.
So when I talk tough about the evangelicals, a lot of that is coming from a place of they really piss me off in politics. Yeah, I haven't been to a church in, what's the last funeral we went to? Almost 10 years ago?
Yeah.
The historical stuff of it's really fascinating to me. And honestly, like the history of it is super interesting to me. I've said this to Ian before. If I were to adopt a Christian religion or a Christian sect, it would probably be Catholicism. Mm-hmm. Because it gives you a degree of certainty that you don't have being a Protestant. And it's easier to deal with some of these stories that are troublesome because they don't literally believe that that's the literal truth.
What's the certainty that Catholicism gives you?
Well, that if you follow the rules, you do your time in purgatory, you go to heaven.
Okay, so do you still believe in a heaven?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think there's some useful ritual that helps make life meaningful. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine myself being like, okay, we're going to go to Sunday Mass. But if someone was like, we're going to a church service, what's it going to be? Mm-hmm. I would go to a Mass because I feel like at least over the years they've refined kind of some of the stuff you were talking about with like having a sense of community, ritual. I think that stuff is important for humans.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to a Catholic one just because they're long as fuck. Yeah. I mean, it's real pretty in there though. Mm-hmm.
And I've always had a real interest in theology.
Yeah.
You know, the study of what people think about religion and Christianity in particular, that's always been an interest of mine. But I don't believe in a heaven. I don't believe in a hell. I don't think there's a God that judges us. If there ever was a God, I don't know how the universe began, but maybe the Big Bang was God saying hello. I'm open to that. But also, I don't need to be right about it. I'm not a dogmatic person, which is another reason why I don't really fit in any of these things.
Yeah. I also would say agnostic. The only reason I would ever categorize myself in the paganism aspect is because the closest thing that I could be is an animist, mm-hmm. which is that you believe that everything has a spirit, everything has a soul.
Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to hear about where people have their boundaries around God or gods or afterlife, if possible, and all that stuff.
Yeah. For the church that I grew up in, the last time I was in it was for the funeral of my favorite aunt. That is the last time I will ever set foot in that place. And she was the only one that I would ever set foot in that place for. Mm-hmm. It was literally for her funeral that was the only way you could get me into that building. Hmm. I can't really conceive a scenario where I would set eyes upon that place. Yeah, there's a lot of real negative feelings wrapped up with that. We talk about boundaries. That's one that ain't never going to change.
You said that the book of Job, I always thought it was Job, by the way, so.
Me too, for the longest time.
That's how it's spelled.
Okay, so the book of Job is what set you off. So then, at what age did that happen?
High schoolish.
Okay, so when did God die for you?
That's so metal, Kathy.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I would say God died for me sometime in high school, but I wasn't out to my family until probably my early 20s. Post-college, that was a source of tension for my entire adult life. Between me and my immediate family.
Did it take you leaving to be able to be like, okay, this is who I am?
No, it didn't. Okay. It happened before that.
Before that, yeah. Okay.
It certainly helped. I went to a Big Ten school with a huge campus. The joke about like kids go to college and come back liberal and they don't believe their parents' religion. That's not really what happened to me, but I came back more confident to say, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And to be totally frank, by the time I got my first like real job out of college, quote unquote, I'm like, well, they can't do anything to me. I'm living on my own. I have my own place. I have my own source of income. They can't hurt me. So if I tell my mom that I don't believe any of this anymore, she can't do anything to me.
She can pray for you, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, what does that mean? What does I'll pray for you mean? Do they actually pray for you?
I'm certain my mom does to this day.
Oh, yeah. And what is she praying for? That you've come back into the fold?
Yep.
Interesting.
She's told me this, that God would make himself known to me and that my heart would open up to God again.
But it sounds like your heart has opened up to a spiritual being again.
Yeah, but again,
it's not her God.
It's not her God. We're not Catholic. We don't do that. You know what? I'll tell you a story. When I told her I didn't believe anymore and that if I believed anything, it was Buddhism, she was like, well, Buddha didn't come back from the dead. And I'm like, well, that's not really part of the dogma of Buddhism. And I mean dogma in the sense of like religious rules. And I'm like, well, we don't know if Jesus came back from the dead. That's just a belief. And that is just like throwing a bomb.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's not like she started screaming. It was just like, you just told me the sky is purple and the earth is flat.
Yeah.
And that you can fly.
Yeah.
You know?
Now that we got that settled, let's rewind a little bit. When Ian was like, this is what MK used to do. Yeah. Like, he used to convince people to believe in Jesus and that he has some crazy fucked up stories. And I was like, that's interesting. But then the part that got me was like, and he knows the Bible back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that that is still in your bones.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you have this unique knowledge while also being agnostic. It's almost like you're like a spy.
Yeah. Yeah. They turn me into a double agent.
Yeah.
You know, Ian mentioned Book It. A little bit. I've always loved reading, and I had a Bible since I was old enough to read. No, I had a Bible before I was old enough to read. I carried it to church, even though I couldn't read it.
Status symbol, baby. What it looked
like.
That's
actually adorable.
It is.
I don't know why that's so cute.
It was like
to
a
me.
Little red leather, I think literally like a baby's first Bible kind of thing, and my name was embossed on it.
Oh my God.
It was actually really cute.
That's super cute.
Yeah.
And it 100%, it's a status symbol. It's like, look what we can buy for our son.
I loved reading in general, and the thing that probably kept me in the church longer than it would have usually, and I don't know if I've told you all of this story. You all know about youth pastors, right? Like, they have long hair and they play acoustic guitar and
they're hip. Yeah.
They're hip. Okay. Yeah. My youth pastor at my church was the dead opposite of that. He was old. He wore suits all the time.
Was your youth pastor Colin Robinson from What We Do in the Shadows?
Holy shit. He was, and I was here for it. Knowing the Greek, knowing the Hebrew, he was all about that stuff and the history and everything. And there was a couple dudes my age. We were all kind of nerds about that stuff. And we would talk to this youth pastor, something like you might see in like a movie about college, you know, like, oh, after lecture, professor, let's talk about the doctrine of flabbity-doo. And I had some guys that we were all about the same age. We all liked the same kind of music.
How old were you at this point?
About 16.
Wow.
Yeah, that particular youth pastor, because of his dedication to being boring as shit, but I was into it, I think kept me in the fold a bit longer.
Okay, this is how I imagine they chose your youth pastor. They were all playing a board game, and they're like, this guy keeps referencing the motherfucking rules and beating all of us, and therefore he is the king and must teach our children how to be like him. Mm-hmm. That was catnip for you, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was catnip for me.
Okay.
It's the reason why we're talking about this right now. This stuff is still interesting to me. Like I said, I had some kind of cool friends that were in the youth group with me, and they would nerd out about the same stuff, you know, and talking to the pastor after the sermon would be really cool. And yeah, it probably kept me around, you know, learning like how the Romans adopted this part of theology when they accepted Christianity. Like, he had a real historical bent on stuff, and I've always loved history as well, so... I mean, he was still like super fundamentalist and still like, this is the literal truth word of God. But he also was like, yeah, but there's also history too.
I think he would have gotten me, honestly. Yeah. Like, I'm just a curious person in general.
Mm-hmm.
Also, side note, I was about to say they were playing a game of D&D, and then I realized that that's like a whole fucking problem with
that. That's an entirely other episode.
That's a whole episode. The D&D episode.
Oh, we're
going
to get to Satanic
thing.
Panic because that makes me so interested.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I guess it's always a good time to
it's
talk about Satan.
It's always a good time to talk about Satan.
Yeah.
That particular youth pastor, all the other kids hated him.
Really?
They all wanted the guy with the long hair who could strum the acoustic guitar.
Who ended up dating some young girl. I didn't go to church, and I knew from my friends who went to church all of the dating scandals with the youth pastors. Like, that's how prevalent this shit is. It's
really?
Like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
In certain circles, just saying the youth pastor is like, oh, he's definitely fucking a 16-year-old. That's actually my pet theory, why they hired this guy.
Because he probably had no record of that
he
shit.
He didn't have a record, and the guy before did.
Oh, I feel like I missed out on so much juicy gossip by going to a Lutheran church. I just don't feel like the gossip is as good.
No, it's not as good. And I've told Ian this a bunch of times over the years, but there ain't no grudge like a evangelical grudge. Like when they get mad at someone, they hold that shit for years and they will gossip about who was doing what and this and that and the other thing. That was probably my first exposure to what gossip was. It was like, did you know that Mrs. Smith's kid got baptized as a baby?
Is that when they would also go, I'm going to pray for her?
Oh, yeah.
You have to gossip. You got to frame it.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
She needs our prayers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can talk about whatever you want as long as you're like, can we pray for her?
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. I love it.
This was at most of the churches I went to. I didn't exclusively go to this one, but this was the one that fucked me up the most. So, but like almost every other Protestant, or they're all evangelical churches, had prayer requests that you could offer up. Some of them were very kind. Like, can we pray for Uncle Joe? Because the cancer has done returned.
Yeah.
But I'll put it this way. I am certain as the day is long that my mom has put prayer requests in about the kind of lifestyle that her firstborn son is living. And I'm sure there are juicy details in there.
Oh, God. All right. Can we please pray for Samantha for getting to be a hussy and getting knocked up? Lord, help her and her baby and Timothy, who refuses to support her. Some shit like that?
You got it.
Oh,
you
fit right in. I love it. Oh, my God.
You fit right in. Yep.
Do I need to go to evangelical church just for good gossip?
I mean, I'll tell you what, if you want to, I will help equip you with the modern controversies so you can really get in there about someone got sprinkled when they were baptized versus dunked.
Wait, which one do you go for?
I have never been baptized.
I'm sorry, evangelicals. What do you go for?
That's a real minute one. Uh-huh. Some of the Protestants will do sprinkling or child baptism.
Yeah.
The one I went is like, you got to be an adult. And you're going to get dunked. They give you a special
the
gown.
The full pool Boom. Thing.
Yep, oh, man. A little baptismal is what they call them.
I got sprinkled as a Catholic when I was a baby.
Actually, this really highlights a theological problem. The baptism of children is, well, so if something happens, they go to heaven.
Right.
Because they're not old enough to make decisions on their own.
Aren't we born without sin? So
that's a whole other episode, too. The church I grew up in, like, they wouldn't look down on you.
They would look down on my parents for baptizing me.
Yes. That would be a prayer request.
So evangelicals actually believe in consent for baptism? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yep,
so this is a good part of evangelicals, I think.
Yeah, you have to consent to being dunked. They want you to acknowledge that you believe in Jesus, that you've been saved, and this is your public announcement of this sort of thing. It's not necessarily the only public announcement. I was never baptized because I kind of thought it was weird. It kind of weirded me out.
Mm-hmm.
Was anyone in your family?
Yes. Yep. They all were.
Did that cause any tension?
Oh, yes.
You were like, I am not swimming for Jesus?
By the time I was like 8 or 9, it was like, are you going to get baptized this year?
So that's the age you were expecting, is 8 or 9?
I think so, yeah. They want you to be old enough to know what you're agreeing to. And that was a real tension creator that I refused to get baptized year over year. And to be fair, they gave me shit about it, but no one ever dragged me forcibly up there and was like, you're going to get baptized.
I mean, that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. That was some autonomy that I was able to exercise at that age.
You were given autonomy within a small space of something that you all at that time agreed on.
Mm-hmm.
So they assumed that you would eventually get there when you were ready. And so they didn't want what they thought as a very important milestone in your religious life to be something forced upon
you. Yes, yeah, that would be fair. And it's tough to remember what I was thinking at the time. I definitely knew I felt weird because it's this big, like, tub that you're in, and you're in there with the pastor of the church, and you're both in there, and it's like water up to about like your mid chest, and you're in front of everyone. And
I don't want people to see me when I'm wet. Like, that's just a really awkward thing.
Are you wearing white too?
Why
would you wear white and you then dunk someone and then it's just like nipples and dicks everywhere?
Yeah.
It's not great.
The baptismal at my church, the window came up above mid chest height.
Wait, a window?
It was like a cutout. It was an entire structure. It was a separate structure in a separate room.
Uh-huh.
And there were steps that you went up behind it, and it was like maybe 6 feet in the air. And there was a wall in front of it. And in that wall was cut out like a window.
Like an aquarium?
Yeah. Kinda, yeah.
So everyone could see you underwater?
No, the window only came up to about the middle of your chest. So they saw your head, they saw the pastor's head, and when they dunked you, like, your head kind of disappeared.
Okay, I think I understand the physics of this right now. All right, so you would walk in, and they couldn't see you because they were not above you, like, as if it's an in-ground pool. They were below you.
Yep.
Okay. And so in order to see you, you had a window for above.
I didn't know there was a structure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This
yeah,
was, is wild.
Yeah, it's called
to
a
me.
Baptismal.
I've seen those before, but normally it's like an in-ground pool and it's just big enough for two people.
Yeah. Is it like cement? I'm picturing it like
a murder room?
No. I mean, maybe. but the old dolphinarium at Cedar Point, where it was like all concrete and then there was just like glass in parts of it, but just like smaller.
Honestly, that would have been cooler. it was just made from drywall.
Oh, God. Okay.
It was just like, you know, you got a wall and then you got a drywall that comes out from it and there's stairs behind it. There's a platform.
I have more questions.
Yeah.
As a germaphobe.
I was not crazy about that shit either. That bothered me when
okay,
I was a kid.
Okay, because was it chlorinated?
How often do they change it?
Yeah.
I don't think there was a lot of like rules around this, but how they did it at my church is it was once a month.
That they cleaned it or they did the baptism?
No, that they did the baptism.
Got it.
They would fill it up for that event. I don't think it was chlorinated and it still just made me feel weird. The pastor could still see me, like yeah. Not crazy about that.
Was all that water considered holy water or does evangelicals not do holy
no,
water?
No, evangelicals don't do holy water.
Okay, so it's just regular ass water.
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm an idiot. Just my brain was immediately like, what do they do about vampires then?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I loved vampire stories. And it's like, you're shit out of luck if you're a Protestant or an evangelical because they can't sanctify anything. So yeah, it's like this real sterile, public, gross thing that I never wanted to do.
I feel that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to either.
And I mean, by the time I was like 15, 16, I was singing in church. Like I would sing songs from the pulpit for worship by myself. So I wasn't like I didn't mind being in front of people.
Is this where your theater background comes from? Is from
yeah.
church?
Yeah.
We're going to have to do a whole thing about Jesus musicals.
You have no idea.
He played Jesus in a musical at church.
Uh-huh.
Several times.
Several times, but the one I'm thinking of was where he wanted to make it cool, so he had Jesus have a ponytail, and they all lost their goddamn minds.
Lost it.
You need the flowing hair.
Well, I had part of it flowed, but part of it was in a ponytail.
It was like half up, half down.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sacrilegious.
Oh, jeez, you're one of them, yeah.
But also, how did your family not know you were gay?
Denial and wishful thinking gets you a long way in life. It was mostly universally hated, but there was one person who actually sent me a note about that particular version of it where they're like, you were just so fun and open and you look so joyful as Jesus. And I always thought of Jesus as this dour person. You really just helped me reaffirm my faith. And I'm like, I just kind of wanted to look like I was in a metal band.
Hold on. Are you sure it was the Book of Job that did it and not this? Like, maybe this was the point where, like, fuck it. If they won't accept half up, half down Jesus,
no,
I don't know about this.
I was in my 20s at that point.
Oh, okay.
And I did it as a favor to the music minister.
Okay. One thing that runs as a theme between us with the various backgrounds we have in religion is community. So now that you don't have that community, how do you manage that? Are you missing a community with that commonality?
This is something we'll talk about in maybe another episode, but I never felt truly at home at the church that I was raised in. I never felt like I really fit in. Like I had other friends at other churches, some who I knew through school or other things, where I would occasionally like, oh, can I go to Tim's church this weekend? And for whatever reason, some of those churches felt more like a community to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever really replaced that in my life, but I also didn't have it that much.
Okay.
There was things about the church that I grew up in that I just didn't fit in with. And some of the other places where I felt like I did fit in more, it was always a source of tension with my mother that I would go to another church. You have to understand, I would get in trouble for going to the wrong.
I mean, yeah, you're cheating on the church that your family goes to.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, sure.
If there's community missing in my life, there's other things to do that I can get that back.
Yeah, I mean, you can always go to the comic book nerds and be a rules lawyer there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Play some satanic D&D games.
Yeah, I was going to say, he already lives with a comic book nerd on that level. No, I was using it as an example, but I'm like, that's actually me. I'm the one who knows all the comic book canon, so yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus That's Weird is created and hosted by MK, Kathy, and Ian. You can find us and our social links at JesusThat'sWeird.com. Join us next time when we discuss the Satanic Panic.